learning a new word today on Scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
And I'm Don Wooten. Presbytopia is a new word and the name of Reverend Ken Golden's book. We'll ask him about it on Scribble. Not only a book, but a new term. How about that?
Is it one you invented?
Well, I hope so. It's definitely, from my perspective, a made-up term. It's a compound word of two smaller words. Presbys in Greek means
right.
Old. And that's where we get Presbyterian.
Right.
Topia means place.
Right.
So it means old place. And I came up with that name. It was hard to find a title for the book. The publisher wanted something catchy and pithy. And I thought of utopia, which means no place, and dystopia, which means bad place. And presbytopia kind of had a ring to it. But since that time, people have pointed out that presbyopia means old eyes.
So. Right.
Well, presbyopia. Isn't presbyopia a medical term?
It is. I believe it's farsightedness.
Right.
It's. But you have moved right.
Well,
into
that would
the
fit, right?
We're very farsighted about our faith. Yes.
What prompted you to write this book?
Yeah. So I had when I started pastoring back in 2005, I was using other people's resources and found some of the information helpful and some of it I wanted to expand upon. So I started writing an outline that I was using, and over the years I used the outline exclusively. And then I was asked to review a book for our denominational magazine, a book for a book table, for somebody who was visiting a Presbyterian church for the first time. And as every tradition has its strengths and weaknesses, Presbyterians are very deep thinkers, and sometimes we think over people's heads, and it's very hard to access for somebody in the outside, and that tends to be a lot of the books that we find on our book tables. And I reviewed a book, and I found that was the case, and I thought, well, if I'm going to not agree with the scope of this book, then perhaps maybe I should put my money where my mouth is and turn my book or my outline into a manuscript, and that's where it started.
At least one pastor said that the book that most Presbyterians use is Confessing Christ by Calvin Cummings, but he said your book is better. It's easier to read, and it makes the points more clearly. That must make you feel pretty good.
Well, Calvin Cummings was the first book that I used when I became a member, when I became a Presbyterian, a member of our denomination. And Cummings covers a lot of good material, but his book was written 40 years ago. And that doesn't mean just because a book is 40 years old doesn't mean that it's dated. But I thought there were things that I covered that I worked into my outline and eventually my manuscript that Calvin Cummings didn't cover, and vice versa. So I thought that there was room on the market for both books. And we have a lot of churches that still use Confessing Christ, and some have moved on to my book.
How did you happen to come to religion at all?
Wow, that's a big question. We might need more than the 30 minutes.
There's another book.
That's another, yeah. Yeah, that's more of an oral piece that I tell people. I was raised in a Jewish home. And I wasn't very religious. My parents were not very religious either. My dad emigrated from Poland in 1937. He got out of Poland before the Holocaust. And he really was turned off to a lot of religion. He considered himself Jewish and participated in the high holidays and had passed over Seders. But he was more of a Zionist than an active practicing Jew. My mother was more of a nostalgic Jew. She loved Fiddler on the Roof. Her dad played the fiddle. And I was brought up in that environment. When I was 13, after I was bar mitzvahed, I kind of shook the dust off of my sandals after having to learn how to read a portion of the Old Testament in the original, and really did not have any interest in religion. But some years later, met my wife. Wife is raised in the Roman Catholic Church, and we began to explore what religion meant to each of us so we could better connect with each other. And we had an opportunity to study the Bible in another church and did individual studies. And once I started reading the New Testament for myself, a light bulb turned on. And I just kept reading and reading and reading and wondering, well, I'm Jewish. I can't honestly believe this stuff. But I kept reading and reading and reading and becoming very sympathetic with this character named Jesus. And he was nothing like what I had heard about. He was very, very just powerful in his words and personality and just nothing like anyone that I've ever read about. And found myself gravitating more and more to who he claimed to be. And the group I was studying with felt I wasn't moving fast enough, so they brought a Jewish convert in from Brooklyn. We were living in New York, New Jersey area. And he had me read the Old Testament. And I started reading the Old Testament. And I made it all the way through the book of Leviticus, right in the middle of that book, chapter 16, the Day of Atonement, Yom Kippur, one of the worst days of the year for me as a young Jewish boy, because we'd spend all day in synagogue. My parents would be fasting. They'd be at each other's throats because they were hungry. I didn't know what was going on. I didn't enjoy it. And here I am reading Leviticus, reading about the Day of Atonement, reading about the high priest going into that Holy of Holy Places and offering a lamb or a goat on the altar for the sins of the nation, the one time he got to see the Ark of the Covenant every year, and then laying his hands on the other goat, sending him off outside of the community. And before I knew it, I put two and two together and I realized that's Jesus. And my life has never been the same.
So why Presbyterian?
Well, that
or it's Orthodox Presbyterian, right? And I want to know how that's different from...
Right. So Presbyterian runs the gamut. It's a spectrum of...
Right.
The tradition began about 500 years ago during the time of the Reformation with John Calvin, who was seeking to reform the church according to Scripture. He was one of the Protestant reformers. And as many church traditions go, there are changes over time. So that Presbyterianism runs the gamut from what we would call the far left theologically to the far right. And the Orthodox Presbyterian Church, Orthodox literally means straight teaching or straight thinking,
right.
Ortho, straight docs teaching. And What we desire to do, imperfectly, of course, because we're all sinners, what we desire to do is to retain our tradition. We believe that reading the Bible requires a roadmap because it's a big book, and we have good tradition to understand the Bible through. We do make room for people, and we believe the Scriptures to be what they claim to be. So. We believe our tradition is biblical and historical.
How does it differ from, you know, the Presbyterian Church up on 18th?
Right. So over time, Presbyterian Church became influenced by other things, as everything does. And in the 19th century, there was a movement away from biblical orthodoxy, you could say. There was higher criticism happening in Europe. And some people in a lot of denominations were questioning whether the Bible was true or not.
Right.
And Presbyterians struggled with that as well in the late 19th century. And into the early 20th century, there was some teachers at Princeton Seminary, which was a bastion of historical orthodoxy. And there was some debate about about this going on in the denomination. One of the teachers, J. Gresham Machen, wrote a book called Christianity and Liberalism. And we're talking about theological rather than political here. And he really called those teachings into account and claimed they were a different religion. And that got him in hot water. And eventually the seminary was reorganized, and some of the new board members did hold to the modernist views. And they left and formed another seminary called Westminster Seminary in Philadelphia. Sometime later, they ran afoul of the denomination over home missions, and they left and actually were removed and became what is known as the Orthodox Presbyterian Church in 1936.
Okay, so and how large a denomination is that?
I don't have I don't have the exact numbers. I would say that we're on the smaller side. We do have, there's probably a couple of hundred congregations across America and in Canada. There's been various divisions in the Presbyterian Church USA over the last 70, 80 years. We were the first one, and there have been two others.
Right. Same with the Lutheran, right? I mean, Lutherans get together, and then they split along different lines and get together and split along different lines.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So by being more Orthodox, does that mean things like predestination are, you hold that more than the, I mean, the average Presbyterian, it's hard to get a straight answer out of these days.
Yeah. And that leads me to think about the division of my book. Actually, the first seven chapters are what's called Christian essentials, what most Christians do or should believe. The middle chapters are what's called Reformed distinctives. These are things that you're going to find more in a Presbyterian church than other denominations. And the idea of predestination, which I include under TULIP, that's an acronym for total depravity, unconditional election, limited atonement, irresistible grace, and perseverance of the saints.
Right. Those are the five tenets of Calvin.
The 5 points of Calvinism, yeah. And we, you know, we hold to predestination. We hold to it unashamedly. We don't believe that God closes his eyes and picks people at random. We believe that none of us are worthy of his choosing, but he chooses people out of grace and mercy. And it's an act of his love rather than some kind of arbitrary selection.
I ended up doing my dissertation. The reason I'm interested in this kind of stuff is I ended up doing my dissertation on Jonathan Edwards.
Oh.
And because I was an English major, I was not a religion major, but the question that I approached Edwards with was, if everything is predestined and the congregation that you're facing has been pre-selected and that grace is irresistible, why bother to preach?
Right. That's a great...
So that would be a good question I would ask you.
That's a great question. I love that question. God justifies the ends, but he also justifies the means. And he chooses to accomplish his purpose in eternity through his church, through preachers.
Okay.
Just like I would ask the question back, why do we bother praying if God is knows what he's going to do ahead of time? He's not bound to our prayers. He chooses to accomplish his purposes according to his will, but he also chooses to work our prayers into his plan. As he does, he chooses to use preachers and he chooses to use everyday people to share their faith with their neighbors and coworkers and classmates and whatever. And God uses those opportunities to work the gospel into people's lives.
You know, one of the things that intrigued me is your church seems to have moved. I went looking for it and I found, I think, about three different sites for it. Is that true?
We are truly become a Quad Cities Presbyterian Church. when I started, I was not the first church planner. It's a church plant. It's a small group. I started in 2011. I took over the church plant from a colleague of mine, and we were meeting in Moline at a Youth Hope Center. Hmm. Most of the congregation was living in Davenport at the time, and we discovered quickly that some people were a little scared of driving over bridges.
Oh, there are people that won't cross the river.
It's crazy.
It's absolutely crazy.
It is.
It's 20 minutes anywhere in the
plus,
city.
Plus, it's easier to get Rock Island people to go to Davenport than Davenport people to go to Rock Island.
Oh, yeah. That's there's that division that is so deep.
Yeah.
And so, with good reason right now. I mean, the two states have different approaches to the pandemic.
Yes.
So the division serves a good purpose at the moment. But you started in Moline, huh?
We started in Moline at an airport, a hotel, quickly moved to the Youth Hope building in Moline. Then we moved the church back in 2000, I believe it was 12 or 13. We moved to the Seventh-day Adventist Church on the west side of Davenport, close to where I live. And we had a great relationship with them for a number of years, but we felt that the timing was right for another move. And last year we moved to Morningstar Academy, where I worked part-time or full-time. It was a second job for a year. We had a wonderful relationship with them, but with COVID-19, they decided not to renew the lease because it's a school, and
right,
there were concerns about outside groups, and I think those are reasonable things. So we were, you know, this happened about a month ago, and we were thinking, what are we going to do? Well, I work in hospice with Unity Point. That's my other job. And I've gotten to know some funeral directors in the Quad Cities, and one of the funeral organizations, Whelan Presley, on the Illinois side, great guys, calling around, and they offered us to use their Knox Chapel, which is where their crematorium is. It's a beautiful chapel very close to the Centennial Bridge. So we're actually going back to Illinois, and we're
going to face
the challenge that Don mentioned of luring Iowa people to cross the bridge.
Yeah, that is a beautiful chapel. I've been there. And when it was first purchased, I think. That is a good site. But are you trying to meet now with a lot of churches are going virtual. Well,
so,
how are you handling that?
Yeah, so we went virtual for a couple of months, and when the governor of Iowa opened up the churches in early May, we decided to wait another 30 days because we felt that it was too soon. And we resumed our worship May 31st, and we have been worshiping ever since using all kinds of special precautions, as most churches are doing. And, you know, we're trying. It's a challenge right now because we want to worship. We believe it's important. We have the sacrament every week, and that's something that we weren't able to do when we were live streaming. But at the same time, we want to love our neighbor as ourself, and we don't want to be the cause of spreading a pandemic. So we're trying to find that happy medium.
Well, if you find it, let us know. It's a tough one.
But where do your members, your new members, come from? Other denominations or?
Right. So yeah, we do, because we're kind of a niche, because we're a historic Presbyterian
right.
church, we do attract people who move to the area who are looking for that. To me, that's it's wonderful. I accept anybody who, you know, who's interested in who we are and would like to learn more. But I also want to see people in the Quad Cities who don't have a church or who know nothing about the faith to come visit us as well. I want to be accessible. And that's one of the reasons why I wrote the book. Because our literature and our tradition tends to be very heady, I felt that's a strength and a weakness. And I felt like your average person is going
right.
to pick up one of our books and say, this is too much for me. I need this is an advanced course in Christianity, as one person accused us of being. And that's not a compliment per se. That's an indictment.
Right.
And I wanted to write something that was accessible, that people didn't need a dictionary or an advanced degree to understand. And I'm hoping that whenever I do meet people, and I do a lot of one-on-one classes with people, in public places, and I use the book, and I tailor it to their needs.
Mm-hmm. It's I noticed in a review of your book, it says it's divided into three parts: essentials, Reformed distinctives, and means of grace. And, you know, it sounds as if you've got a pretty closely organized kind of theology. And does it take time to work your way through it?
Well, it's 14 chapters, and that sounds like a lot of time. It doesn't have to be 14 sessions, though. It really depends on the needs of the person. If somebody comes to me and they have some kind of church background, and I get a sense that they don't need to go word for word, I'll ask them to read the book on their own, and we'll summarize three or four chapters a session. The middle chapters, which you mentioned earlier, the Reformed distinctives, those require a little bit more patience, and I get a lot of questions on those chapters. And the means of grace, preaching, sacraments, and prayer, there's a lot of people that don't understand infant baptism. There's a lot of people that don't understand a view of the Lord's Supper that involves the real presence. So those require some explanation, too. But I try to tailor it to the student's needs.
If someone's looking for your book, where do they find it?
Well, it's widely available on most of the online booksellers. Amazon's a good place to start. The publisher is a Scottish publisher called Christian Focus, and we've had a very good relationship over the last 4 years. So it's very easy to find, and you can probably find it used as well.
Well, and have you thought about writing a book about your own journey of faith?
That's a good question. I haven't thought of that per se, but I do have other interests in the hopper. Actually, I'm in the middle of writing my third book right now, which will be published later this year. It's a book on the Lord's Supper, and the tentative title is Eating and Drinking with God.
Third book. I only know of Presbytopia.
Well, we should do an interview on the second one then.
I would enjoy that.
The second was called Entering God's Rest, the Sabbath from Genesis to Revelation and What It Means for You. And that's published by an American publisher called the Alliance of Confessing Evangelicals on the East Coast. And that book presently is available through the publisher. There are copies. There's an ebook copy available on Amazon, but we're working toward getting print copies on Amazon as well.
Oh, that's a book that got by me. I didn't know you had the second book. So, well, three is a magical number. You might as well go ahead and write the third one again.
The third and the fourth book, The Four Corners of the Earth.
Work your way up to seven.
Exactly. If I live long enough. I try to make it as an artist in New York City about 20, 25 years ago. And one of my passions is talking about art and writing about art. I haven't painted in 20 years, but I would like to write a book on art and faith. That might be my fourth project.
It sounds as if you've had some interesting turns in your life. I didn't know about art. What led you to art?
Well, I've always enjoyed drawing, and I took painting lessons growing up, and I was one of those students in the 80s graduating high school. I didn't know what I wanted to do, so I did what I knew. And I went to school and couldn't make a living out of it and worked a couple of jobs and then decided, well, I might as well go to grad school. So I went to Pratt Institute in the early 90s, and I learned a lot there, actually. And I had a show in 1994 at an East Village gallery, and then everything went downhill from there. but it's a topic that, as a Christian, is a topic that I love talking about. I'm one of those art lovers who appreciates non-Christian art, but I also like to get people to think about it critically.
Well, you know, religion has been a great source of inspiration for artists in music and visually, and some of the richest things we have. Some of the things we prize most in music and in visual art have religious subjects. And How is Presbyterianism on that? Some religions are very tough on not getting into art.
Yeah, Presbyterianism definitely has some tension with visual art. Not all visual art, but religious imagery in particular. Many people would regard us to be the Latter-day iconoclasts. We don't typically have images of Christ and Mary and the saints in our worship services. There is some difference of opinion on that in Presbyterian circles, but our confessional documents prohibit them. So I definitely hold those things in tension as an artist. I appreciate the beauty and quality that I see in Renaissance art, pre-Renaissance Byzantine art, but at the same time, I can understand, you know, I can see the reluctance in having those items in worship. So it's something we hold in tension.
Isn't that because the first commandment in some denominations is single, and in some it's split? You split away the false images part of that. And I know you mentioned tension. I've read about that tension.
That
must be interesting for you with your background in art.
It is difficult, and I think what we're talking about here is a spectrum. What we do publicly, I have ordination vows that I have to uphold, and I might have my private opinions on these things. But what I do in worship, I'm consistent with my ordination vows. But I do, you know, I think the party line and what many Presbyterians believe is that images of Christ, Mary, and the saints would be a violation of the Second Commandment, according to the way we parse out the Ten Commandments. Our view of worship, which I talk about in Presbytopia in one of the chapters, is that we believe that worship should be according to Scripture, what God commands, or by good and necessary consequence can be derived from Scripture, rather than, you know, doing things that we think are good. And there's good reason to hold to that view. So
interpretation of the Scripture is really important, isn't it?
Absolutely. Our interpretations of the Scriptures are fallible because we're finite, because we're human, because we're sinners. There's a lot of factors that come into play when we interpret the Scriptures, but we're still called to try to make sense of these things, and that's the whole purpose of creeds and confessions. The whole purpose of theology is trying to make sense of Scripture so that we know how to live, we know what to believe, and we know how to live.
Before we run completely out of time, Ken, tell us again where we might find a copy of Presbytopia.
So the number one place I would go is to Amazon or an online bookseller. You're going to find lots of copies there. If there are questions about that, I would consider going to the website of my publisher, Christian Focus Publications, out of Scotland. But it's a fairly easy book to find.
Okay, well, we appreciate knowing about that, and we appreciate you taking time to talk to us today, Ken. Reverend Ken Golden has been our guest today, and I'm Don Wilton with Roll Tweet. We'll be back next week with another edition of Scribble, and thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you.